So many people are looking up at the stars, thinking about these grand visions. And for me, I've always just been looking down at the ground, trying to figure out how to get around the pothole that's right in front of me.
Hello, hackers. Thanks a lot for joining us for another episode of the Hacking UI podcast, where we hack our way through product design, development, and creative entrepreneurship. I'm David Tintner.
And I'm Sagi Schreiber. This will be our seventh episode of the third season of the Hacking UI podcast that we call Scaling a Career. In this season, we have 10 amazing guests for you that are leaders and influencers from a variety of different backgrounds. We will release a new episode of this season every Thursday, so stay tuned and make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. So for this season, we have two amazing sponsors with incredibly useful products for you, Envision and FreshBooks. So I bet you all know Envision. So today I want to talk to you about designbetter.co. The education team over at Envision created an amazing source of quality learning material for product designers. They interviewed dozens of leading designers in companies like Google, Airbnb, Netflix, Facebook, Slack, and more. And basically they did that in order to discover the design practices that they use in order to help everyone, their audience, which is us, transform our design process and push our organizations to the limits. So don't forget to hit designbetter.co. It's an amazing resource. They have 4 books that they published. They have an amazing podcast of their own. Be sure to subscribe to it. And they have workshops for designers, so you can check those out as well.
FreshBooks is the perfect accounting software for freelance designers and developers or creative entrepreneurs with a small business. FreshBooks is built from the ground up to work for people like us, let's say non-accountants. They have some really powerful features like integration with Stripe, expense tracking, and a customer support team that actually picks up the phone and works with you to find the perfect solution. Actually, my favorite part about FreshBooks is the super smart notifications they send, which show you the highest priority task you can do right now in order to improve your business. Again, if you're an experienced accountant and you're looking for the all-powerful analytical monster of a tool, okay, this is not it. But if you're like us and you're just looking to get some understanding of your business and keep track of things without wasting hours of your time, then this is exactly what you need. If you want to see what it's all about, FreshBooks gives you a 30-day free trial and doesn't even require a credit card to log in.
Okay, so onto our episode today. Our guest today founded an open source community of over 1 million people who are learning how to code together while building projects for nonprofits. He's a top writer on Medium and holds one of Medium's top publications for his community. This community is called Free Code Camp. I bet some of you already know it or are part of it. And in this super interesting discussion, you will learn how Free Code Camp started, how it grew, and why our guest chose to focus on writing as a way to spread the message across. This conversation will hopefully totally inspire you and give you a boost of motivation and belief in the good that we can all make in the world with our own skills. So, ladies and gents, it's our pleasure to present to you the one and only Quincy Larson. Let's get hacking!
All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of the Hacking UI podcast. We are here today with Quincy Larson. How's it going, Quincy?
Hey, everybody.
Hey, thanks a lot for joining us. So, Quincy, you're joining us from Free Code Camp. And before we get into kind of the conversation today, why don't you tell everyone a little bit about what you're doing?
Sure. Free Code Camp is a free open source community where you can learn to code and then get your first developer or technical designer job. And thousands of people every year finish Free Code Camp and then go get developer jobs. So it's a proven path to learning to code that doesn't cost you anything. It's completely self-paced. It's completely remote. You can do it anywhere. And we have thousands of study groups around the world where you can just go hang out with people and work through Free Code Camp along with them. We also have a really active forum where you can ask questions if you get stuck. And we have one of the biggest Medium publications and a popular YouTube channel where people regularly live stream themselves coding and record lots of helpful videos. So the best way I can describe it is just a huge community of people who are passionate about coding.
And that's really, really cool. I mean, you mentioned you said you're the largest tech Medium publication there is, right?
Yeah, we're technically like right behind The Economist. I mean, we've got more than 300,000 people that follow us on Medium.
So before we get into that, because I definitely have a ton of questions about how you got there and everything you're doing with, you know, promotion and the content you guys are creating, but a little bit more about Free Code Camp. So I guess in the past couple of years, we've seen like a rise in all sorts of coding academies and different ways for people to learn to code. But you guys kind of have an obvious thing different about you. It's free. That's pretty cool. Can you talk about that a bit?
Sure. So I made the decision back in 2014 when I was basically committing the initial code. I decided to put the word free right at the beginning of the name so that everybody would immediately know, okay, this is free. We're not going to change our name. It's not going to suddenly be paid or anything like that. We're going to figure out a way to make it work as a free open source community. And it's working pretty well. We're a donor supported nonprofit. So a lot of people just give us small amounts of money every month, and that helps us pay for servers and other expenses and helps us continue to improve the curriculum and improve all the other supplemental stuff we create, like the YouTube videos and the Medium articles. So it works really well. Basically, we're just following kind of the Wikipedia model. I mean, I look to Wikipedia and Mozilla and a lot of these other organizations as a great template for open source organizations.
Wow, really cool. So, and I got to admit, the first time I saw Free Code Camp, I was all over the website saying, all right, what's the catch? Where can I, come on, how are they taking money? Where's the pricing page? And I was really going all over and I'm like, where is it? Where is it? And it's not. It's totally a completely free organization. And I think that's really amazing.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. A lot of people ask, what's the catch? Well, the catch is if you go out and get an amazing job, then like, well, I mean, it's not really a catch, but we would love it if you'd kick us a few bucks a month or something just to help us pay for servers. And also, one of the catches is it's really hard. I mean, we're not going to sugarcoat it. Learning to code well enough to go out and get a developer job is a massive undertaking. And you need to be psychologically prepared for it. But the great thing about it is we've got this huge community of more than a million people who help each other, and you help other people, and then when you need help, they are there to help you. So it's kind of this pay it forward mentality. So without all the people in the community wouldn't function. So everybody's playing an active role in contributing somewhere or another, whether it's giving people critiques of their projects that they built, or whether it's answering people's questions when they get stuck and get some sort of stack trace error, or whether it's just cheering people on when they tweet out, you know, a link to a new project they built on CodePen or JSPen or something like that. People can dive in and look at it and give feedback. Like, all of that stuff is really what powers Free Code Camp. Free Code Camp is powered by positive energy and empathy.
I like that. It's powered by positive energy and empathy. You said that it was kind of always the idea from the beginning, from 2014 in the founding, to make it free. But what kind of inspired that to say that, you know, you weren't going to start a company with the purpose of, you know, making as much money as possible, which is kind of a fairly common idea, especially among, you know, developers and people in the Valley and startups. You kind of took the completely opposite route.
Right. Well, I'm a teacher. I worked as a teacher, and then I worked as a school director here in the U.S. and in China, and I still identify as a teacher. That's my title at Free Code Camp, and I think that as a teacher, you want to help people succeed. You know, there are a lot of cynics out there who are like, oh, there's no such thing as altruism, or there's all, like, everything has some hidden price, or everybody has some hidden motive. I don't believe that. I know tons of teachers out there who are content to just have, you know, a normal level of wealth that like a typical Westerner would enjoy, being able to, you know, afford to get a house, being able to afford to pay for health insurance, which is something we have to worry about in this country, things like that. Like, as long as those basic needs are met, you know, a lot of teachers are just cool with that. And it's not just teachers, but teachers are a great example. So I think that people have bigger aims than just trying to amass this. You know, I lived in San Francisco for a long time, and definitely people have the objective of just accumulating power in the form of money, usually, or, you know, voting stock on a board in an organization where they can basically steer a massive organization. I totally understand why some people want to do that, because they see that as a way of affecting change in the world. But at the same time, it's not the only way. You know, Jimmy Wales' net worth is less than $1 million, I think. You know, the guy who created Craigslist just donates all his money, and he works as a tech support for Craigslist. He likes helping people. So there are plenty of examples, if you look hard enough, people who, they're not motivated by trying to aggregate wealth or power. They just want to help people. And that's what my bag is. I'm all about trying to help people out. And that's what really makes me happy with myself. And that's how I envision myself actualizing myself. And I think there are a ton of people within the FreeCodeCamp community who are the same way.
And that's awesome. I really respect that. All right. So Quincy, one thing I'm really interested in is, how is the organization structured?
So FreeCodeCamp is a donor-supported nonprofit. We are basically in the process of getting what's called tax-exempt status in the U.S. It's called 501c3 status. And basically, we're just waiting for the IRS to send us that. They should send it any week or so because we applied for it really far early in the year. For a long time, we just operated as a California closed corporation because in California, that means you don't have to really pay anything for the first year. There are no real fees and you can basically just completely avoid having any sort of board meetings or anything. So we were so busy building and expanding FreeCodeCamp that we didn't really have the time and the energy to try to do all the corporate governance stuff. But we decided like, okay, let's move to a nonprofit formally so we can start accepting donations, because we didn't want it in good conscience to ask for donations if we were not a nonprofit. So once we had the nonprofit set up, we started asking for donations, and that has helped pay for the servers and a lot of the other expenses. How is FreeCodeCamp the nonprofit set up? Well, we have a board, and I'm what's called the executive director of the board. Executive director is the nonprofit equivalent of a CEO, though a lot of nonprofits, the person who's in charge of the board is called the CEO.
Okay.
But in our case, we went with the standard American custom of having it be called the executive director. Stop me if this is way too boring. Basically, we meet, we have board meetings and minutes, and next year we're going to publish a document that it's like basically a transparency report. It's kind of like a publicly traded company releases like an annual report. Well, nonprofits release a report on like all their finances and other things like that. So we get to prepare all those documents as well, but we should, no problems, be tax exempt by the end of 2017. And then we'll be able to get like free Google AdWords credits and some free Amazon credits and things like that. And it'll help reduce some of the cost and also help us get a little bit more reach. Because so far, FreeCodeCamp has been completely word of mouth. We've never paid for any sort of ads. We don't have a PR team. Often I see articles in like the New York Times talking about why something like FreeCodeCamp doesn't exist. And I'm like, it does exist, but we don't have a PR team to get the word out. So we're still trying to grapple with basic public awareness and things like that.
Even without, the PR team, like you said, you guys have managed to get the word out in a crazy way. I mean, you're the, like you said, the largest medium tech publication. I think you said over a million users. Is that correct?
Yeah, we have more than a million people that use FreeCodeCamp every month. And we've got like 1.3 million registered users who've actually bothered setting up an account. Now, all of FreeCodeCamp is completely accessible without creating an account.
Wow. So let's talk a little bit about how you did that promotion and how you got to, become such a large medium publication, and really, frankly, why you chose to kind of like focus on writing in order to, I guess, spread the word.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of really good social networks that, and I think, like, I read a great book about marketing in general called Traction. It was written by the creator of DuckDuckGo.
Okay.
And he and his co-author basically go through, I think, like 19 different modalities of marketing, and they recommend you basically just choose three. So we chose content and social media, and the other one, which I can't remember, I think we backed away from the other one. I think it was like originally PR, but we just didn't get any traction with that. So we just focused on like basically compelling programming related content, which, there's so much about video games, there's so much about, sports and things like that, but there really isn't that much great content for programming. There are a few YouTube channels that I really love. There are a lot of great authors on Medium, but we sensed that there was an opportunity for us to create a lot more. So I just started writing a whole lot, and I convinced some other people to write as well. And people started writing articles and submitting them to our publication, and our publication grew. And same thing with the YouTube channel. Basically, we were using it to live stream. And I would hop on and live stream the development of FreeCodeCamp, or another camper would jump on and live stream building, their app, things like that. And gradually we moved from Twitch over to YouTube and started kind of doing a little bit more editing rather than just always live streaming. We still live stream some.
Okay.
And, you know, the YouTube just grew from there. But those have both been huge drivers of awareness for Free Code Camp.
I mean, from an outsider's perspective, it looks like you guys just really nailed it. I mean, the Medium publication is amazing. You're constantly being featured by, on Hacking UI, we feature lots of articles. And I know a lot of the other front-end development newsletters and design newsletters featuring your articles. Did you have, you know, any experience in, let's say, writing or creating content before you started doing it for Free Code Camp?
So when I was in college, I was a journalist, and I worked as a journalist for a short while before I moved over to China and started teaching. I would say that that was tremendously helpful. Journalism is one of those fields that's kind of underappreciated, certainly if you look in terms of compensation and job security and things like that. And the field itself is just kind of undergoing this massive upheaval.
Definitely.
Where professionals are kind of being edged out by amateurs to some extent. And it's up in the air as to how you're going to monetize any of the journalism that you're doing. If you're doing ad-supported journalism, well, good luck, because Facebook and Google own like 85% of all online advertising. So you're fighting for scraps, basically. And my heart goes out to the journalists who are running independent news sites and trying to make those things work. But for us, we were just trying to raise awareness of Free Code Camp, basically. And our philosophy has always been, let's just create really compelling content that stands alone and is interesting on its own. And hopefully people will see enough of this and they'll see the Free Code Camp in the upper left-hand corner while they're reading enough times, and they'll be like, hey, what's this Free Code Camp thing? I keep seeing it. What is it? And then they'll actually go to freecodecamp.org and find out, oh, it's a learning platform. I can learn to code for free. So that's been our approach, basically, is just create a lot of stuff that people are reading, that people are talking about, that people are sharing, and enough people see the name Free Code Camp, and enough of those actually go over to freecodecamp.org. That's basically it.
I just want to say that's really cool. I didn't know you were also with a journalist background. I'm a journalism major myself, and something that I started hearing a lot more of recently, a lot of developers that have a journalist background, and very cool.
Yeah, I think writing is a killer skill, and I urge everybody to spend as much time as writing as possible. I mean, it's useful for so many things. It's not just for publicity, but for clear communication. If you talk to, I think you interviewed Matt Mulloway mm-hmm. from WordPress a few months ago. And I mean, WordPress is an organization that literally runs on text. It's people texting, sending text messages back to one another. And GitHub, similarly, it's people writing issues and writing pull requests and basically typing and trying to get their thoughts into written word. That's how they communicate. And for most remote organizations, that's going to be the key modality. For Free Code Camp, we're fully remote, and writing is just a killer app. You really need to be able to communicate. So I would strongly encourage everybody who's listening to this to focus on that skill and prioritize it.
I definitely agree. And you mentioned something else I thought was pretty interesting when you were talking about your strategy for promotion of Free Code Camp. I think that you wanted people to kind of see it a bunch of times, and eventually they would click on it and want to know what it is. And I find that really interesting that you had that take, because I think that's actually the way that creating content works. But a lot of people don't realize that at the beginning. They want to see kind of an immediate return on their time that they invest into creating content. And if they don't see it on, you know, that first article that they write or the first thing they do, it's really frustrating and difficult for them to continue on. But it sounds like you already had that mindset from the beginning to say that, you know, it's going to be something we're going to do as a long-term strategy over time, and eventually people will tune into it.
Right. I would say pretty much everything we've done with Free Code Camp has been focused on the long-term. I'm a huge believer in long-term planning, and I think the organizations out there that are doing a lot of long-term planning, Amazon and Tesla and some of these other ones that are thinking 20 years in the future, I think they're going to have a huge advantage. And I certainly think Wikipedia is a great example of, if people just wrote a few articles, Wikipedia is a very limited use. But if you extrapolate that out 17 years, you can kind of see that it's going to be this massively useful thing, that a crowd attracts a crowd, and you're going to have a whole lot of contributors, and it's just going to get better and better. You get this virtuous circle. And that's how we view Free Code Camp. We're kind of thinking 20 years out. Right now, we're just covering web development, and we're not necessarily a great standalone resource. We encourage people to use other resources as well. Read lots of classic textbooks from the 1970s written by, you know, the computer scientists who basically created the field, read lots of books on software engineering and different principles and best practices, and watch a lot of YouTube channels and listen to a lot of podcasts and things like that. It's conceivable that, you know, 20 years from now, Free Code Camp could be a much more robust general resource for learning and might even kind of expand out into other areas of technology beyond just programming. So a lot of that is going to depend on us having a whole lot of contributors who help us build that out and make it as robust as possible.
All right, so let's take a short break to talk about our sponsors, Envision and FreshBooks. So I bet you all know Envision and love Envision, but today I want to talk to you about designbetter.co. The education team over at Envision created this amazing resource of quality learning material for product designers. They interviewed dozens of leading designers at companies like Google, Airbnb, Netflix, Facebook, Slack, and more, basically to discover their design practices in order to help us learn from that and implement that into our organization. So first of all, they have a podcast that you really need to subscribe to. It's a great podcast. And also they have 4 books they've put together. So you better head over to designbetter.co and check those out. Also, you can check out one of their kind workshops for designers.
FreshBooks is the perfect accounting software for freelance designers and developers or creative entrepreneurs with a small business. FreshBooks is built from the ground up to work for people like us, let's say non-accountants. They have some really powerful features like integration with Stripe, expense tracking, and a customer support team that actually picks up the phone and works with you to find the perfect solution. Actually, my favorite part about FreshBooks is the super smart notifications they send, which show you the highest priority task you can do right now in order to improve your business. Again, if you're an experienced accountant and you're looking for the all-powerful analytical monster of a tool, okay, this is not it. But if you're like us and you're just looking to get some understanding of your business and keep track of things without wasting hours of your time, then this is exactly what you need. If you want to see what it's all about, FreshBooks gives you a 30-day free trial and doesn't even require a credit card to log in. So can you tell us a little bit about that long-term vision that you have for Free Code Camp and where you see it in 20 years from now?
Yeah, well, technology and programming. Programming is how you talk to machines. It's how you get things done using the rapidly growing processing power that we have. And I'm always quick to remind people that most of the work that's done today in society is not done by humans. It's done by machines. Say you want to go to another town. You're going to use Google Maps to get to the airport. You're going to use Expedia or Kayak to book the ticket. You're going to use Airbnb to find lodging. You're going to use Lyft or Uber to summon a car. So many of the tasks that a human would have traditionally done, like a travel agent, are now done by technology. You know, it's just incredible how much potential there is, if you really think about it, to make human beings, individual human beings, so much more productive than they are today. Pretty much every aspect of your daily life that is routine, that you do a specific sequence of events, that can be offloaded to a machine. And you look at incredibly productive people, and one thing that they have in common often is that they've systematized things, that they've handed the most routine tasks off to, I mean, traditionally you'd hand it off to an administrative assistant or you delegate it to humans, but increasingly people are handing it off to machines and they're automating those tasks. Technology at the same time is going to create extremely powerful professionals, lawyers who can do the work of 10 lawyers, doctors who are 10 times as efficient as other doctors who aren't using all these tools. Along the way, a lot of people are going to be left behind because when you're doing a tremendous amount of work with fewer people, you need fewer employees. So I think we're heading toward an era where we're going to have a significant portion of people in society, and I'm not just talking about the U.S. here, who are either underemployed or unemployed. And I don't want that to happen because I don't think that there's the political will or the resources to necessarily help all those people who are not necessarily going to have a means for supporting their families. At the same time, the tools are truly democratized. Anybody can spin up an AWS EC2 instance. I think Amazon gives you like the first year for free. Anybody can grab a GitHub account and start hosting static pages, for example. Anybody can create a YouTube account and just start putting content up on YouTube to basically promote their own worldview or to potentially monetize it, maybe not through YouTube ads, but maybe through affiliate links or something like that. There are just so many ways that technology empowers individuals to be able to, you know, actualize themselves, but also to make a living. And so much of their ability to do that is going to hinge on them sound understanding of how these tools work. So for me, technology education ultimately is a buffer against mass unemployment. It's a pathway to a future where every single human being is essentially a superhuman kind of Tony Stark level type character who can use technology to exert their will on the world around them. And I think we can have that future, or we can have a future of people who are scared of technology, who don't have the confidence to pick it up and use it. You know, code is the new literacy. I mean, learning to code is a lot of work, but learning to read was a lot of work 100 years ago. A lot of farmers would say, why do you need to learn to read? You're a farmer. A lot of factory workers would say, why do you need to learn to read? You just, you know, twist widgets all day. But it doesn't hurt at all to learn to code. And the upside potential is incalculable. So that's kind of Free Code Camp's 20-year plan. I know that may sound grandiose, but stepping back, abstractly, that's our goal, is to equip as many people as we can for making use of all these tools that technology are going to provide them.
And you mentioned before that it might also grow into something that you're teaching other fields or you're teaching other subjects. Do you think that's something that can happen, that you'll be democratizing kind of, you know, other fields that might be a little bit less accessible to people today?
We're very interested in mathematics. We're very interested in machine learning, data science, to some extent, user experience design, product management. We don't want to try to boil the ocean, though. We're very aware of our limits, which is why our core curriculum is focused purely on web development. We'll be adding supplemental concepts. One of the things about Free Code Camp is we have standardized certificates that are verifiable. You can get for free if you complete certain projects. So if you complete a certain amount of projects, you'll get a certificate that you can put on LinkedIn, for example, or you can put in your resume. And right now, those are just for web development concepts, but we may eventually have certificates for a wide range of things. And depending on how Free Code Camp grows and expands, you know, certificates traditionally aren't held in super high esteem by most employers. They're like, yeah, show me a four-year degree, show me a PhD in something, and then I'll take you as an expert in it. Whereas, you know, if these certificates are properly policed for academic dishonesty, and if they are sufficiently rigorous, they could carry a lot of gravity. So, you know, Free Code Camp could potentially come to represent like an alternative traditional higher education. For example, we're not interested at all in trying to educate kids. Mm-hmm. I think there are a ton of organizations already doing that. But what we're really interested, where we're focusing now, is just trying to help adult learners. And most of those adults already have a four-year degree. So I could see Free Code Camp as potentially disrupting, if you will, master's degrees.
And what about the regular four-year degree? Do you think that's something that is still necessary or a good thing for someone who wants a career in to be a web developer, let's say?
Yeah, I would recommend everybody get a four-year degree. The main issue with all these, I mean, I think master's degrees are great too. I think all education is really good, and it can be worthwhile, and these teachers are well-intentioned, these administrators are well-intentioned. It's just that the costs are so freaking high, man. I mean, in the United States, we've got like $1.3 trillion in student loan debt.
Yeah, that's incredible.
$1.3 trillion with a T. That's $1,000 million. I mean, it's mind-boggling. Like, that amount of money, that represents, you know, a 50th of global GDP for the year. And that's just in debt. Going to college, you talked about earlier how you went to journalism school. There's a new journalism program that's like 1 year and it's $150,000 for like a master's in journalism. And I'm like, man, how are people possibly going to recoup this? The key to education is you just need to cut the prices down. And there are so many organizations that are doing this, right? At the four-year degree level, there's Western Governors University, which is an accredited university that allows for ultra-low-cost degrees. There's University of the People, which is also ultra-low-cost. And then there are some traditional universities, too, that are very focused on helping their students recoup the money they spent as quickly as possible. And I think Arizona State University is one of the gold standards in terms of just providing high price performance for a university degree. And that's who Starbucks partnered with. Starbucks said, we're going to make sure every barista who works at Starbucks can get a four-year degree. And the way they did that was they went to Arizona State University and they basically worked out a deal, because Arizona State University is primarily online and they've been doing this for a long time and they're pretty good at it. So, you know, is a fully online degree as good as going to a university campus and living there for 4 years and being able to interact with the professors and face to face and having a cohort of students you go through it with? Probably not. But you can work a full-time job and still get a university degree. You can work on your university degree coursework while you're riding the subway to work. You can do it after the kids go to bed. You know, you don't have to worry about the time constraints. And it certainly costs a lot less because you don't have to worry about paying fees for like gymnasiums and sports teams and libraries that you don't necessarily use except to get their Wi-Fi. You know, like all these additional facilities, you're not subsidizing them anymore. Instead, you're basically just paying for the instructor who's going to review your content and do the instructional design and things like that. So I think with higher education, we're going to see a back to basics movement because there are certain people who are starting to realize, wow, costs are out of control. We can totally rein these in. We can achieve incredible economies of scale and scope using the internet. And so I'm very confident that we'll eventually be a society here in the US and in some places like Korea, they already have pretty much everybody going to college. And I think that that would be a very positive development. But what we can't afford at this point is to have every single person in America go to a university and live in, you know, a student residence for 4 years and do nothing but study.
Right, I agree. There's definitely a real question that comes into play about the value for the money. And I think that this question is coming up more and more, especially in the fields that we're in, because people are seeing that you don't necessarily need, let's say, a computer science degree in order to get a job as a web developer, or you don't need, you know, a design degree in order to get a job as a designer. But you brought up some good points that there's definitely a lot of value in the four-year degree that's not necessarily just, you know, the classes that you take. So, yeah, I think it's definitely an interesting question, especially in our field.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens. But I'm optimistic that technology combined with just good management skills, which I think, frankly, a lot of our universities lack. I mean, there's a lot of sluggish bureaucracy that's failed to adopt new, better ways. And there are a lot of organizations that just don't care about money. They seem to think that like education is something that should not be valued in money, which is irrational, in my opinion. Everything has a monetary cost associated with it. That's just the unfortunate reality. So hopefully more of these organizations will wake up to reality and start thinking about the actual costs. And I think if they do that, then everybody will be better off. But I tell you, FreeCodeCamp is always going to be free because we believe in access and we believe in everybody being able to get in there and try it. And frankly, the marginal cost of serving the million and one person is not significantly higher than the millionth person. Mm-hmm. Once you get to a certain scale, the additional costs start to dissipate and they taper asymptotically towards zero.
So I want to, you know, like you said, you've already served over a million people with FreeCodeCamp, and you must see a lot of kind of different career paths that people are taking or the things that they're studying in order to get a career in web development. What would you suggest if you're, you know, to a lot of our listeners today, they want to start studying web design, web development? What would you suggest are kind of like the best way to get yourself a career in the field or make that career change?
First of all, I'd recommend that they spend as much time doing design, doing development as possible. I don't think that there's some magic gene that people are born with. I think that aptitude may play a small part, but what really plays a big part is just passion for what you're doing and spending a whole lot of time doing it. So I would recommend that they plan to code and do design as much as they can, and that they use a wide variety of resources, that they steep themselves in books and podcasts and all those kinds of resources. And I'd also recommend that they spend as much time as possible hanging out with other people who are, you know, coding all day, who are designing all day. Go to a hacker space, go to tech talks and other meetups, go to hackathons. Basically, just try to meet as many people as possible. Meeting people has two purposes. One, it keeps you super motivated and you learn a lot along the way. But two, those people are going to be your real network, right? They're not like some random classmate from, you know, college who you haven't talked to in 3 years who happens to know somebody who knows somebody on LinkedIn that you need to talk to try to apply for a job, right? They're literally in the room with you, elbow to elbow, working on things with you. And they know your abilities and they know what you're like as a person. You want to see what somebody's really like, work with them. And I think that that's the best network you can build, because those people are going to be out getting jobs and their boss is going to be saying, gee, it's so hard to find UI designers. It's so hard to find people who actually understand, you know, design fundamentals, or it's so hard to find designers who can code. And that person's going to pipe up and say, hey, I know a person, and they're going to recommend you. And if you need a job, you'll have a network to kind of disseminate, hey, I'm looking for work and here's my portfolio. So that's really a strong way to build your network. And a lot of people focus on trying to meet the hiring managers, but I think that just having peers is also a really valuable tool.
And that seems to be one of the things that you're promoting in FreeCodeCamp is like this strong sense of community. Can you talk about that a bit? How are you helping the campers kind of to engage with each other and to, I don't know, meet up with each other in person or online?
Yeah, so we strongly advocate meeting up in person. Online is really useful too. It's convenient. That's the main thing. We have a very active forum. We have a ton of Facebook groups. People can basically ask questions to one another and hang out there. We also have a chat room system. But meeting in person, there's something about being in the same room with somebody physically. Like, it's just part of the human element, right? Being able to look at them, being able to read their body language and see their face and shake their hand, hug them. I mean, there's just an affinity that you build up when you do that. So we've really emphasized study groups, and we have thousands of study groups around the world where people basically meet in coffee shops. They meet in places like employers that are willing to open their offices in the evening to host a FreeCodeCamp study group, libraries. There are all kinds of facilities where somebody will take the initiative at the local level and say, I'm going to lead this FreeCodeCamp study group. And then we give them the resources in terms of advice. We publish tons of articles by people who are doing this successfully. So they have a constant stream of success stories that they can read through and glean. And then we have, you know, Facebook groups where they can talk to one another. But basically, one of our goals is to establish strong local study groups so everybody feels like they have a local support group in their neighborhood, not just in their town, but in their neighborhood, ideally where it's not a big pain to swing by after work. The closer and the more local it can get, then I think the closer the relationships and the higher the level of participation.
That's really cool. I'm really kind of in awe of the community you've built and every detail of it in just a couple of years. One of the things that we discuss a lot on Hacking UI, and Sagi and I had the Side Project Accelerator also, where we talked a lot about building communities and helping people to kind of build their own audiences. What would you say is the biggest tip that you would give to someone who wants to start their own community like you did, or build their own audience like you did?
Well, I would say try to piggyback on existing communities to the extent possible. There are already so many great communities out there. And if you have like a unique reason for being that is complementary to existing communities, a perfect example would be like Women Who Code. That's an organization that has lots of chapters, and a lot of people will kind of create subgroups of it. And a lot of the FreeCodeCamp groups kind of like spawned in close proximity to those.
Okay, that was an organization that you kind of like piggybacked off of?
Well, we've done it off of so many organizations, and it's never really in like this formal concerted way. It's just like people meet each other at this organization. They're like, hey, this group meets every Saturday, but we could meet every Tuesday and Thursday. Like, we can meet even more frequently. Or people who, you know, they aren't working and all they're doing is coding all day long. So like, hey, let's create a little group at the library. They'll meet at other events, or maybe they'll meet at hackathons, and relationships will start there. That's how you can do it in person. How you can do it online is there are tons of different publications on Medium. You get published in Medium. And the way that works is basically you have all of your followers plus the entire following of the publication you get published in. It's a union of the two. So you'll reach a way wider audience. And a lot of organizations have kind of started that way. Some organizations that have grown out of FreeCodeCamp that are kind of doing complementary stuff around FreeCodeCamp, there's an organization called Chinggu, which is like Korean for the word friend. Okay. And they do cohorts where basically they get together and they all work through FreeCodeCamp and other resources in lockstep, as opposed to FreeCodeCamp traditionally is completely self-paced. So, but with the cohort, then everybody's working together and they're able to motivate one another. And each week they're doing a specific thing. They feel an additional amount of accountability, which for some people is extremely helpful. Another example would be an organization called Open Source University. And they have basically just created a whole lot of curricula on GitHub, and they work together through them, and they constantly fold new resources into it, but it was created by a camper. So yeah, a lot of those types of organizations kind of offshoot from FreeCodeCamp.
Okay. And that was a good tip that I think you gave that a lot of our listeners will get out of, as many people in the Hacking UI audience are trying to build their personal brands and build their audiences, that you said to kind of cross post on Medium or guest post in other publications. And I know that you have a lot of guest writers as well for your publication, right?
Right. And on our YouTube channel, I'll often interview people, or other people will create a video about a specific topic, like agile software development, for example, and they'll, if it's good, we can post it, and then you can basically borrow our audience is kind of how I look at it.
So how does that process work if someone wants to be a guest writer for Free Code Camp, Medium publication or YouTube channel?
So if you Google Free Code Camp publication guide, that should pull up. But we have a document that has our style guide and submission instructions. But and also there's an email address that people can submit potential YouTube videos to. And we just basically look at those and decide, you know, we don't accept everything, but we do accept some stuff. So it can be a great opportunity to get in front of a lot of people who are doing development work, design work, and data science work.
And I'm just curious, how many submissions like this do you get in, like, I don't know, a week or a month?
Probably get about 100 submissions a week.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, most of them we're not able to publish, but we do publish a lot of them.
That's really incredible. I mean, really, just you guys have built something massive.
Yeah. It is not lost on me, the scale of what we've achieved here. And I work like 80, 100 hours a week on it, just trying to make sure that things keep moving forward and that we're making forward progress toward this vision of free education for everybody, free technology education for all adults. So it's just something that, like, with all of the success of having this big community come together, it comes a lot of pressure to keep it going and keep it together. So I'm just constantly doing my best to not let the community rest on its laurels. And I would say my primary role within Free Code Camp at this point is volunteer management and helping contributors productively work on different things they're interested in. So I work pretty closely with, you know, more than 100 different people who are contributing to Free Code Camp in some way or another. And then there are thousands of contributors, if you zoom out, who I often indirectly interact with. I haven't had a chance to talk to every single one of them, but that's my goal. Eventually, talk to every single person who's actively contributing to Free Code Camp and figure out how I can make that process smoother and any ambiguities I can clear up along the way. And just, you know, we're nothing without all these amazing contributors. We'd just be another guy in his closet where I started, you know, trying to get people to read his blog posts.
And what are people contributing? What are the volunteers doing or with Free Code Camp?
A lot of them are contributing code. A lot of them are contributing instructional design for our curriculum, which is pretty big. I mean, if you were to work through all of Free Code Camp's curriculum right now, it would probably take you about 1,600 hours or so.
Okay.
A lot of them are contributing articles for the Medium publication and YouTube videos for the YouTube channel. A lot of them are just providing help on the forum and in the chat rooms. And then, you know, several thousand people are running study groups. And that's the biggest block of contributors is people just acting locally.
When you started this, I got asked, did you think that it would become such a massive community and you know, such a gigantic organization?
I hoped it would. I'll tell you a story. Before this, I was trying to build another education community and it didn't get any traction. So I spent about 2 years basically alone in my closet, just coding and trying to build up some traction around another adult education technology project, which was basically trying to help people transition from one career to another. The main distinction was that it focused on all careers rather than just coding, like anything related to technology. And so after almost 2 years of doing that and getting nowhere and, you know, working 100 hours a week and just being by myself all the time, like squinting at my terminal, I basically said, like, this isn't working. How can I make this work? It's too complicated. Like, how can we take away all the unnecessary cruft? How can we simplify what this is so people can see it and understand it? And I thought about all the different skills that we were trying to teach. We had like this list of hundreds, like 600 or 700 different discrete skills that we wanted to teach, and all these courses that were associated with them that our recommendation engine that I built would serve up to them. And I thought, what's the one? Let's just focus on one skill instead of all these 600 different languages and tools. And I thought, what's the most useful skill? Like, what is the one thing that pretty much everybody should learn right now? JavaScript.
Okay.
So basically I just took the microphone and scoped in to one specific topic, JavaScript. And we started from there. And we're really still focused mostly on JavaScript. I mean, we cover CSS and HTML and stuff, but a big part of it is just learning JavaScript really thoroughly, because that's the lingua franca of the web. Things are converging on JavaScript. Software is eating the world and JavaScript is eating software. As Jeff Atwood, the Atwood's Law, any application that can be written in JavaScript will eventually be written in JavaScript.
So I like that.
So yeah, that was the big breakthrough for me personally. Like 2 years of being all by myself, nobody caring, nobody reading any of my tweets, nobody reading any of my blog posts. And then bam, we focused just on JavaScript and I came up with a much simpler name, Free Code Camp. It's pretty unambiguous what that does. And that's when people started being, oh, okay. And then, you know, jumping into the chat room. And yeah. So I just want to make it clear that this wasn't an overnight success. I spent 10 years as an educator. And then I spent 2 years basically grinding away in a closet, eating microwave burritos and trying to get something up that people would care about. So I think that a lot of that is just having domain expertise, being focused very passionately on one field. For me, it was adult technology education and really falling in love with the problem of helping adults learn technology. That was very critical to helping me power through all that. And I think to some extent, like when I talk to people who've successfully gotten projects up that are getting to a point where they could potentially step away from them for a day or two and the snowball would still keep rolling down the proverbial hill without them pushing on it. Whenever I talk to those people, one thing I notice is they seem to be very passionate about that single problem and they've been focused on that problem for a long time. They're not some idea guy who is taking a shower and thought, oh, it's annoying that blah, blah, blah. I should fix that. They've been eating and sleeping and breathing this problem for much of their professional careers. And so that's, I strongly recommend that, you know, lawyers learn to code and doctors learn to code and accountants learn to code. Everybody learn to code and then you'll be able to take your domain expertise and apply it in all kinds of new ways to solve all kinds of long existing problems.
I can totally relate to that. I mean, that's exactly why I learned to code. I was, like I said, I was studying journalism and I just wanted to build a website or I wanted to do something and just wanted to be able to have kind of the tools to create other things. I wasn't necessarily fascinated with the academics of code or getting into like a deep understanding of computer science. It was just kind of, I wanted tools to be able to do things, to create things. So I can definitely relate to what you're saying about, you know, other fields and other professions should learn to code as well. Okay, so we're over an hour here. So I want to kind of wrap up shortly. I think we've covered a lot of really interesting stuff. And I think people really appreciate, you know, especially what you had to say just now about it wasn't overnight success. And, you know, that's the kind of things that gives people, especially our audience, encouragement to kind of push on. You know, so much of what we hear and kind of is like hyped up on TechCrunch and stuff is like some kid just launched a photo sharing app and, you know, made $1 billion. And you're like, oh, come on.
Oh, speaking of Instagram, like one thing that Kevin Systrom said about Instagram, and so I listened to during my years of toiling as somebody who wasn't having any success with projects. I listened to this Stanford Intellectual Thought or Entrepreneurial Thought Leaders series, and it's a series of lectures. And the founder of Instagram, since you mentioned selling a photo sharing app for $1 billion, the founder of Instagram was on there, and I listened to that talk one day while I was just walking around the airport waiting for a flight and trying to burn off some energy. And one of the things that he said in that lecture that really stood out, that still resonates with me today, is he said, don't get caught up in the meta. Don't worry about what other people are doing. Don't focus on their success. Don't read TechCrunch if you can avoid it. Like, you're just going to get jealous because you're just seeing the successes. You're not seeing the hidden evidence of all the ships that's sunk and are, you know, lodged down in the rocks out of sight, right? You're just seeing the projects that are sailing along and look like they're doing great. So he said, don't get caught up in the meta. Don't focus on what other people are doing. Don't worry about competition is one thing that I learned. The founder of Wikipedia, whom I've referenced a few times by now, Jimmy Wales, he always said, like, we were always deadly afraid that somebody was going to come and create a better free encyclopedia than us. And he felt that distracted him a lot of the times and caused a whole bunch of undue anxiety. But the reality was, you know, they kept plugging along and the competition never really materialized. And if what you're doing is something that's distinctly useful and it's solving a problem that a lot of people are experiencing and hasn't been solved yet, you know, you don't really need to worry about competition. And I think it's a huge distraction to try to think in terms of specific industries and market share and all those things that a lot of businesses traditionally focus on. And what's a direct substitute for my project? What's an indirect substitute? You know, I mean, you could spend all day doing competitive analyses and trying to understand the meta of your field. But if that's keeping you from actually sitting down and building the project and going out and finding people who are interested in using it, then that is taking away from your momentum, not potentially adding to it. And I mean, to some extent, if Google enters your field, well, there's not a lot you can do anyway. So a big part of it is just staying focused on the task at hand. There's a quote from Linus Torvald, who I have a lot of respect for, even though I'll be honest, I don't think he's the greatest community manager ever. He's not the most polite guy. But he said, so many people are looking up at the stars, thinking about these grand visions. And for me, I've always just been looking down at the ground, trying to figure out how to get around the pothole that's right in front of me. So what he's saying is basically just focus on what's right in front of you and keep plugging at it day after day. A lot of the people who come out of the woodwork who seem like legitimate competition will just be kind of interlopers who are passingly interested in a field. If you've spent a lot of your career just focused on solving a specific problem, there's a very good chance that there aren't that many people out there who are similarly focused on that, and they're going to approach it from a point of naivete that will render their approach less effective or less appealing. So don't doubt yourself.
And that is excellent advice, I think, for our listeners. Don't doubt yourself. And, you know, hearing your story, you definitely took your own advice. I mean, I'm just imagining building the project for 2 years, like you said, and you know, not finding success and then keeping up with it and iterating and doing something different and pushing on like you have. And you've really built, you know, something awesome that's massive and is really helping over a million people change their lives. And I think it's really, really amazing. So with that, Quincy, thank you so much for joining us today. And it was a really interesting discussion. Before we go, can you, you know, obviously everyone can find you on your Medium account. And is there anything else that, or another way on the internet that our listeners can get in touch with you or something else that they should follow?
Sure. I'm on Twitter. I'm twitter.com/Ossia, O-S-S-I-A. And you can follow me there. And I don't tweet super often, but I try to make sure every tweet is worth reading. And you're not going to get me complaining about like a line at the airport or anything. Like, I almost always tweet articles of substance that I've, of course, read and think are worthy of your time. So yeah, you can do that. And I think the main thing is if you're interested in expanding your coding skills, check out freecodecamp.org and let me know what you think of it. Just shoot me an email.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Thanks again for having me, David.
All right, everyone, and that's a wrap.
We hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please consider sharing it with a colleague or a friend that you think would benefit from listening to it.
And if we may ask, one more thing. Please rate us on iTunes. This will help the podcast reach more audience and make us so happy. You only have to do this once, not every episode, and it has tremendous impact.
Thanks a lot, hackers, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Woohoo!